I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome to Radio Times. Protesters in New York City occupied Zuccotti Park last month, calling themselves the 99%. They said they wanted to protest that they live in a society that favors the wealthy 1%. Occupy Wall Street is now a month old and has inspired similar protests and tent encampments in other cities in the U.S. and around the world. Occupy Philadelphia has been set up on Dilworth Plaza outside of Philadelphia City Hall for a week and a half, and two of the members of this group join us here in our Philadelphia studios. Sophia Hoffer-Perkins is a member of the Facilitation Working Group at Occupy Philadelphia. She's also owner, teacher of the Wayfinder Experience and owner and practitioner of a small business called Intuitive Transformations. And Sophia, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
Also with us is John Lang, a recent graduate of the University of the Arts. He currently works at the American College of Physicians next door, and he's part of the media team of Occupy Philadelphia. And John Lang, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
And to our listeners, if you have any questions or comments for our guests, lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Sophia, let me begin with you. And what do you hope to accomplish with this protest? And by that, I mean, what do you see as the major reform that would mean this has been a success?
Wow. Okay. First and foremost, I just want to say, each time anyone from Occupy Philly speaks, and me included, are speaking from our own personal experience. I can only speak today as Sophia, my dreams, my hopes, and aspirations. So when I think about Occupy Philly and why I'm there, I recognize my motivation, which comes from, like, my gut, like, mm-hmm. my instinct. Mm-hmm. There's, like, a feeling that things are not right. And so the reason I'm there is because other people have said, if you have that feeling, come here. And so I've showed up. And once we gathered, it seemed pretty natural that what we need to do now is talk and figure out what is the connecting point between all of those feelings. What is that really about? Because we've all got our agendas. We've all got these, like, little pieces that need to be addressed. But I think a lot of us believe that there are core elements underneath all of that. I know one of them is, that's coming up over and over and over again, is this private money, corporate money running our government and really controlling the, you know, that there was once a separation of church and state, and now we're looking at the separation of corporate and state.
And is that the gut issue for you as you begin to understand why you're there and what this movement is about?
I think, as I understand it, I understand that there's more for me to understand. Every day that I'm there, I learn more about the lack of information I've known or haven't seen. I haven't known that information. And so the more I'm there, the more I want to be there. I think one of the biggest things for me, I view this as
Go ahead.
is that there's been a lot of people that haven't had a voice for a long time. And there's been a lot of movement and control, I believe, in the government and other forms to shut down those voices, to separate those voices, to, you know, starting with the civil rights, it's purposefully been shut down. And when you gather in a place, the only way to shut down those voices is to move those people. And so voices that have not been safe to speak in the past now have a safe place to come and be heard. And so there's a lot of voices that have not been heard by other people because they didn't have a place to do it. And so we're creating a safe ground where I say, come here, tell me, I'm going to protect you, you're going to protect me.
And I want to pick up on that, but let me get you in on the conversation. Now, John Lang, what brought you to Occupy Philadelphia?
Well, I remember when they were having the protests in Cairo at Tahrir Square. There was something about it that made my blood boil. I was just so into it, hanging on the edge of my seat. I would stay up till, you know, 5 in the morning reading about it and just seeing these normal, everyday people fighting for this kind of ethereal concept of freedom and freedom of speech. And, you know, I knew that there was something lacking in American society. I wanted to be part of that fight to bring it back to the ideals of American society. And then when Occupy Wall Street happened, I was reading about it. I was like, this is just like it. Now, I want to start something like that in Philadelphia, and it had already happened. It already started, and so I got involved designing posters for it, getting involved on media before there was a media team, and so that's how I got into it.
No, and I went actually by Occupy Philadelphia this morning so I could literally see what's going on there before I could talk about it. But I wonder why on the grounds of City Council, or City Hall, I should say, and why not at the Federal Reserve, for instance, in Philadelphia, or the Philadelphia Stock Exchange, which is probably a closer representation to Wall Street. And I'm tossing it to you, Sophia.
Well, we met, by we, I just mean a large group of people. There was a group, I believe, I wasn't at the first meeting, of about 150 people that gathered and began to talk about, where do we want to occupy in Philly? Right. And they came up with a list of 12 places, and then they offered pros and cons in terms of, you know, space and resources and what it is. And basically, boiling down to it, one of the things is when you occupy federal land, you're talking about a very different thing. We wouldn't be dealing with Philadelphia police. You know, we wouldn't be dealing with Philadelphia court system. That's a big statement, and I think that there is enough energy to go to that federal line when we have something that we're actually, if we have something that we're actually demanding. But right now, since we are gathering, it's about having a safe place. If for me, this is my, you know, what I've kind of gathered from it, a safe place to gather. And at the same time, corporate control is, I mean, the city has been bought and sold under us and over us over and over and over again.
But John, the city has been, it seems, very accepting of Occupy Philadelphia. The mayor has been out there talking with people encamped at Dilworth Plaza.
Yes, they've actually been pretty cooperative with us. We have a mutual understanding at the moment so far.
And I mean, so far, meaning, do you anticipate that there might be conflict or tensions?
Well, recently, Occupy Philly received a letter from the city requesting a few things of us, and we have our own responses to that. And, I mean, it's not just responding to that letter is not a matter of just simple, okay, we'll take care of that. Right. We have some things we need to say back to the city, and I believe our response is going to be put to a vote tonight.
And what is in the letter? What did the city say to Occupy Philadelphia?
Among the things they wanted us to, we have a wooden structure where we've been housing some of the homeless people. We built a pallet structure for them, and they said that was a fire hazard, that we need to move that at least 20 feet away from City Hall, which I don't understand how a concrete structure catches on fire like that, but whatever. They also had concerns about trash, that the signs on our occupation was litter, and that we needed to take care of that. The other thing was that, and probably the biggest point of contention, was that they had mentioned our evacuation date, which when we had applied for our permit was not part of the deal. So that is a point we're going to have to talk to the city about.
And there is a construction project for that part of Dilworth Plaza that has been, I mean, essentially is going to happen in the next couple months. Could that be a sort of point of contention, Sophia?
Yeah, I mean, it is. And it's one of those things where it is a point of contention. You know, Center City applied for, as far as I understand from, you know, General Assembly last night, the Philadelphia Center City District applied for a grant to build what I've been told is a ice skating rink on Dilworth Plaza. And so there's a bunch of things that come up around that. Mm-hmm. It's an expensive thing, and there's a question of, like, I understand this money is given for a particular purpose, but it's a lot of money. Part of the, you know, discontent with people is that we have all of this federal money that can go here, but we have no city money to go here. You know, there's, again, it's like, again, this complicated issue that we as a collective are taking the time to kind of distill and hear different voices and see what it is. But I think it is exactly that. It's a point of contention. And not necessarily at this point between the city and the occupation. Right now, it's just a point of contention in terms of what are we going to do about it?
But do you feel like you own that space?
I believe that we, as the city of Philadelphia, own that space. You know, I'm a citizen of Occupy Philadelphia. I'm a citizen of Philadelphia, and I think we all have ownership to that. And I think one of my concerns that was raised last night was they're going to build an ice skating rink. Is that ice skating rink going to be public, or are they privatizing yet another?
I mean, do you actually think they're going to build a private ice skating rink on the grounds of City Hall?
I have no idea, but it's a question, and it's not. Is it that ridiculous of a thought? at this point, it's like, I don't really, you know, I don't know. That's a great question. And for me, one of the things that I suggested to the General Assembly is, like, let's make sure we put in, there's a term that we call clarifying questions. Mm-hmm. You know, let's find out, you know, a big thing is this conversation. Let's find out really what we're talking about. Is litter litter, or are you trying to make reference to our signs? You know, maybe they really just mean, like, trash. Well, we pick up trash. We have a sanitation working group, and, you know, one of our requests at every meeting is we're all part of that, you know? So, yeah, we agree. Let's pick up trash.
I'm curious, John, and Occupy Philadelphia is about a week and a half old. Mm-hmm. Do you, though, anticipate that your this group of people, maybe including you, maybe other people, maybe not including you, will be there in a year's time? Is there an end point or a point at which you say, you know, we have accomplished what we have come here to do?
I guess only time will tell. We are prepared to be there as long as we need to be there. This is an occupation. This isn't an event put between two goalposts. It's an occupation, and we have a lot of goals that we need to see. We want to see our country fixed. Until that point happens, we're going to be occupying.
But what does that mean? And I know there have been criticism of the press saying, you know, there isn't a coherent message coming from Occupy Wall Street or perhaps even Occupy Philadelphia. But at the same time, I think the public wants to know, why are you there? And what would be considered, you know, success from your part? And fixing the country, I think, is something we all want.
Right.
But I think we need something more specific than that. John, go ahead.
Well, a lot of things that are being tossed around, and we as a group are still figuring this out. And it is a democratic process. No one person can say what we're about. But a couple things that have been tossed around is the Citizens United decision. Many of us, including myself, would like to see that overturned in legislation stopping that. Another thing is getting corporate money out of politics, which would also come with the Citizens mm-hmm. United decision. Another thing is the Federal Reserve. We don't like the fact that it's a private company, and we want to see that if there's going to be a Federal Reserve, it better be a real Federal Reserve and where the people are accountable in it. And that's been several things that have been tossed around.
Would you say, Sophia, that you could ally yourself with one party or another? Is there a party which you feel some connection to?
Well, those
and we're talking about a largely Democratic or Republican, but there are some other parties
as
well.
Yeah, I would say, you know, those are two different questions. Would I say that this occupation could kind of align with a party? And at this point, I definitely feel like the answer is no, hands down, no. You know, I personally was raised in a very, you know, Democratic upbringing, heavy independent, you know, kind of really, you know, not strictly Democratic, but this, you know, a Democrat, but largely. And I think that this movement specifically is, I mean, one of the biggest things is it was even in my dreams two nights ago.
Literally.
Literally, I'm asleep. And in my dreams are people driving by the occupation and they're yelling, go get a job. And
is that
real? Every night.
That
happens every day. It happened that day, and then it happened that night in my dreams. And people yell back all sorts of things. People yell back, I have a job. People say, do you want to give me one? people say, and I've taken to, please stop and talk to me. Please stop and join the conversation, because if you have information that I don't have, I want it, you know, and I don't care. I don't care what party they're from or what agenda they have. I want them in the conversation.
Well, let's take a very short break, and we'll get some of those callers in on our conversation here on Radio Times, talking with two people, part of Occupy Philadelphia. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. They are John Lang and Sophia Hoffer Perkins. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
How does where you are influence what you do? The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY and presents Here, an exhibition that looks at how the work of contemporary artists is saturated with the experience of where they live. On view October 22nd through December 31st, Here showcases the work of 24 artists and artist collectives from six different regions of the country. For details, 215-972-7600 or PAFA.org.
I'm Marty Moscoane. We're in the middle of the membership campaign here at WHYY. Become a supporter of WHYY. Just take a minute or two and go to WHYY.org or call 1-888-345-9499 and make that pledge of support. You decide what WHYY means to you. In this hour, we're talking about Occupy Philadelphia with two participants and with the former head of SDS. We have the time to explore issues at length and in depth. That's why you listen, and that's why we do the show. Thanks.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Have you been feeling anxious, worried, on edge? The Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit at Penn Medicine is studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders. You may be eligible to participate in a research study looking at the effects of natural supplements to treat the symptoms of worry and anxiety. Initial evaluations determine eligibility for treatment. To learn more about Penn Medicine's Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit, 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. So who is occupying Dilworth Plaza right next to City Hall here in Philadelphia? And why are these protesters calling themselves the 99%? Well, we are curious about the answer to that question. That's why we invited Sophia Hoffer-Perkins to join us. She's a member of the Facilitation Working Group at Occupy Philadelphia. John Lang is a member of the media team. And we have just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. Well, we are all about conversation here on Radio Times. So let me get Lisa from Maple Shade to join our conversation. And Lisa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
I'm going to make this short.
Good.
I feel that that America came about as a struggle against taxation without representation. At this particular time, with 1% of the executives and corporate America influencing our political system, we need to take money out of campaigns. We need to elect politicians who have the interest of the 99% citizens in this country at heart.
Oh, fair enough. Lisa, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and not surprisingly, both of our guests are nodding enthusiastically. John, do you want to weigh in on Lisa's comment?
Oh, no, that's exactly what we're about. We feel that, you know, this country was made, you know, for the people, by the people. And so far, I don't know, when's the last time you felt a vote actually mean anything? And I think it's time to remind the Washington, and not just Washington, but the states and the cities, that they work for us. We're not their minions. They work for us.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that when you vote, mm-hmm. that vote is meaningless?
It feels like in a lot of ways it is, because, I mean, $60 million into being president, and what is all that? That's advertisement. That's sponsors. That's a lot of that money is going into buying people. It's not necessarily into, you know, showing people what the issues are. It's going into buying people.
And you're nodding.
Yeah, I learned down at Occupy Philly that 94% of the candidates that won in the previous election year had more money than their opposition. And I was like, there you go. There it is. That's all I need to know that we're not voting on issues or proper representation, but just what we've been shown.
Let me get Lisa, thanks for the call. We now have Susan from Delaware joining us on Radio Times. And Susan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, it's a two-part question.
Right.
And I apologize. I don't recall the woman's name. But
Sophia.
I just want to ask a general question. Is the government spending money? I mean, when you spend money from a government perspective, do you want to spend money for a purpose, yes or no?
And that's to you,
Sophia.
That's
the first question.
Okay.
And the reason I'm asking that is this young woman is talking about, for example, the city's plans to open up an ice skating rink at Dilworth Plaza, where you all are situated. And, you know, I totally support what you guys are doing. My concern is that there's no real goal in mind for everybody. And right now, the city, according to the Inquirer today, is spending close to $150,000 a week taking care of the folks that are there in terms of police assistance and security, et cetera, and cleanup. And that's money that's being spent on what and by whom? at least if you look at what their plan is to build an ice skating rink, the plan for that is to bring more people into Philadelphia, to bring more tax revenue to the city so that we can do more for the residents of the city. And I'm all for what you guys are doing, but I guess I'm trying to ask, look at the big picture.
Fair enough.
You know, you're asking now people to spend their tax dollars, and we don't have the money.
Well, fair enough, Susan. No, I think you made a good point. I want to give Sophia a chance to weigh in on that.
Yeah, and by no means do I disagree with anything you said. I really don't. You know, all my first reactions to the project is, great, there's work, you know, there's union work. Like, let's build a project in City Hall. And I'm absolutely in favor of things being built and the city being, you know, expanded and bringing in tax revenue. I, you know, a huge fan of that. There's a question of, you know, I don't know the details about it. I'm not in opposition to it. I have more questions to that. As far as, you know, the cops and the money that it takes, I don't know what to say except that, you know, this is our First Amendment right in the Constitution, and how else are we going to do this work except by doing it? I don't see another option for that. So,
and just picking up on what Susan said, I also was reading in the paper about the cost, and mm-hmm. I was down there. There are a lot of police officers mm-hmm. there. There are sort of rings around City Hall mm-hmm. as well. That does cost the city.
Yeah, absolutely. But the taxes that we pay go into protecting our rights, one of our rights being free speech. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as citizens of Philadelphia, we paid for the right to be there and to demonstrate and to try to make our voices heard. And as for the project at Dilworth Plaza, I think a lot of us feel that if we have $50 million here to build a skating rink, why isn't that being put back into the system just straight in? Why does there need to be something built?
You want an answer to that question?
Well, yeah. I mean, I understand that the labor unions, they get to build something, but then there's also, you know, we've been housing and feeding the homeless better than the city has.
I mean the city has, for better or for worse, spent millions of dollars trying to deal with the homeless problem in this city, mm-hmm. and the fact that there is a fair amount of homeless. You think in a week and a half you've done a better job than the city?
So far, I mean, for a week and a half, I mean, we've fed everyone on Dilworth Plaza for free. We've been taking donations, but we've also been doing our best to build structures for them to sleep in when they were just sleeping on the concrete. And from experience, let me tell you, that's awful.
But is your argument with the city itself?
My argument here is that if we have this $50 million, could it be put straight back in the system without building something there?
Let me get, looks like Paul from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Susan, go ahead. Susan, thank you for calling into Radio Times. And Paul, go ahead. You are on the air.
Hi, this is Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Picking up on that question, I'm very concerned. I don't know if you all read Michael Kimmelman's piece in the New York Times yesterday about he's the architecture critic for mm-hmm. the Times, talking about Wall Street. I've come down to Dilworth Plaza, and this is the best use I've ever seen Dilworth Plaza put to. Far better than anything that anybody's designed, anything that Bacon designed in the first place, that's being considered now. As they said, the homeless are being fed, people are walking around playing the guitar, talking. It looks like an architect's rendering. And I think if we're going to think about what to do with this place, you all, John and Sophia, you should be thinking about the fact that you're providing a model, a great model, I think, for urban design, for what the place could look like. The designer should be looking at what you're doing, not thinking of you as the enemy, but thinking of you as the people doing the research for them.
Well, Paul, it's a really interesting comment. Let me give Sophia a chance to respond to that.
Honestly, it just warmed my heart. I think that there's a big, big question here, which is, do we just design and build things to expand revenue or bring people into the city, or do we build a city that really serves and nourishes the people that live here and bring the people that live here out into the city? It's a great question to contemplate and discuss.
Paul, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let me get one more caller, then we're going to say goodbye to our guests and get a third guest who's been waiting in the wings to join our conversation. And we have Chris from Drexel Hill joining us on Radio Times. And Chris, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I'm calling because specifically in relation to the letter that your guest mentioned the city had sent them with several demands.
Yes, go ahead.
And, right, there are about, I think, a half a dozen demands on this list,
Yeah.
And they all seem to be pretty easily justifiable.
Yep.
For public safety or, you know, fire hazard cause, something like this, and very easy to comply with. And considering the positive relationship that's sprung up between the city and the protesters so far, and especially the support of the police and the mayor, it seems like to take a confrontational stance to this letter would be to maybe poison the waters.
Well, Chris,
that's my concern.
Well, it's an interesting concern. I want to give both of our guests, Sophia, a chance to weigh in on that first, and then to you, John.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is one of the things we're discussing in General Assembly, and absolutely unanimously, everyone said we want a tone that is polite and courteous, multiple expressions, myself included, of gratitude, specific gratitude, not just kind of general, like, hey, thanks, but, you know, we a lot of us, I speak for myself, I feel supported by the city and appreciate that. It's just also, we're not going to take the stance of, oh, okay, thanks, city, for telling us what we need to do. You know, we have concerns for fire safety. Great. We want to bring a fire marshal in, invite the fire union in to educate us, not just about one little pallet structure, but fire safety. You've raised a great point. We want to take your point and expand that and further educate people.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I agree. Our stance to the city's letter is not directly confrontational, but at the same time, it is not directly compliant either. I mean, I like to consider this this movement as a child. It started out very nascent. We were just getting our feet on the ground, learning how to walk, and now we're beginning to mature as a movement. And this is our mature response to their request. We're not just going to take it and do exactly as they say. And we're not contesting it just for the sake of contesting either. We're contesting it because we have our own interests, and as does the city, and we want to come to a mutual ground.
Just quoting one thing here from, I guess it was a blog, and this is a statement, and I'll just read a sentence out of it. As of now, we seek power in numbers, outreach to communities, solidarity with all, and ample time for common ground to be settled upon involving both transparency and empowerment. So does that tell us that there will be, I guess, at some point, and I hate to keep coming back to this, but, you know, in a sense, a list of, if not demands, certainly a list of things that you want changed?
I personally feel that way. And I feel like there's a collective sentiment in Philadelphia that I've seen that is, we're Philadelphians, we're like pretty down, and we're just down. We're like, we want to see tangible results. We're not here to like hang out and hang loose and like do things. We're here to like work it out and see results. Like, we got things to do, we've got music to make and families to take care of, and this is part of what we need to do that best.
Go ahead, John. I'm giving you the last word here.
Well, I think a lot of us feel greatly inspired because this is the birthplace of our nation. This was the first occupation. And so we are going to work. There's a lot of people working towards making our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, to show the country, like, this is where we started. Somehow we strayed to that. Now let's get back to it. Get back to the fundamentals of freedom and a country for the people, by the people, which I think we've lost that recently.
And I should say, in about half an hour, there's going to be a jobs rally at Occupy Philadelphia on Dilworth Plaza. It looks like you wanted to say one more thing, Sophia.
Yeah, one more thing. It's really important. Like I said, we want people to come down to this conversation. We've got working groups in art, media, food, comfort. We're looking for donations all the time, sleeping gear, cold gear, food gear. Absolutely, please, 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 minorities, you know, people that are ably challenged, like everyone, we need everyone's voices, especially if you feel like your voice was not heard in this interview or media coverage. We need you to come down, please.
And that's Sophia Hoffer-Perkins, a member of the Facilitation Working Group at Occupy Philadelphia. And Sophia, thanks for joining us. And also with us, John Lang, he's on the media team of Occupy Philadelphia. And John Lang, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
And we have invited Todd Gitlin to join us to conclude this hour as we talk about not just Occupy Philadelphia, but Occupy Wall Street and the whole occupation movement. He's a writer, a sociologist, a novelist, a poet, professor of journalism and sociology, chair of the PhD program in communications at Columbia University. And gosh, back in the 1960s, he was a president of Students for a Democratic Society. And Todd Gitlin has been a guest several times on Radio Times. And nice to have you back on the show.
Hi, Marty. Delighted to be here.
Nice to have you here. Now, I know you were listening in, and I know you're up there in New York. Anything that you sense that might be different about Occupy Philadelphia versus Occupy Wall Street?
Well, in the great acceleration of time that is upon us, Occupy Wall Street is sort of a grandfather here. It's been a whole month. So I imagine that it's evolved and that it has sort of solidified itself to a degree beyond what the what's happened in Philadelphia or lots of other places. One thing that I think needs to be taken seriously all over the place is that there's the inner movement of the people who are actually in the park, in the space, wherever it is, and then there's the outer movement of, which is much larger actually, in numerically, although less committed day mm-hmm. by day, but mm-hmm. more available for the big marches. And those are people who belong to unions and community organizations of various sorts, MoveOn.org and progressive lobbies of that sort. They show up in large numbers, as on October 5th, 10 to 15,000 in Foley Square, New York, and then I don't know how many thousands showed up in Times Square Saturday. So there are a lot of moving parts in this movement, and of course the New York people are, you know, have developed a newspaper, the Occupied Wall Street Journal. They have, I don't know, 20 or 30 task groups that are meeting, and it's all extremely organized, even though its form of organization is unusual. It's, as they like to say, horizontal rather than hierarchical.
You wrote recently that it's more Rousseau than Karl Marx.
Yeah.
What do you mean by
that?
Well,
they believe in assembly. You know, the great theorists of democracy, actually going back to Aristotle, thought that democracy was something that had to be conducted face-to-face, so there would be a limit on the size of the city-state that you could actually govern through mutual conversation, and Rousseau followed in that tradition as well. Now, you know, the question is whether you can actually govern a modern society millions and billions by the same method, and, you know, we could have another conversation about that, but the spirit is one of mutuality. Anybody can come in and participate, and discussions get talked to a fairly well.
And what do you see then as the message? And I know there's been some critique that it hasn't been a coherent message, or that the media has been, you know, hounding these people to tell us what their message is. But as you have observed this, what's your takeaway?
Well, I think it's actually perfectly clear what the thrust of this movement is. It's the very slogan, "We are the 99%, means there is a 1% who have inordinate power and wealth and control basic decisions. Plutocracy, if you will. A slogan like "banks got bailed out, we got sold out" is a statement about where the government's priorities have been, and it's a negative statement. The general idea, which I think almost everybody gets, is that for decades, the power of the plutocrats has been growing. The country is stagnant. The dreams are shattered. Some people want to occupy as a way of life. Some people, I think larger number, want to stabilize, to achieve a kind of middle-class existence, which they feel that they had been promised. And so then there would be a discussion of what the specific means ought to be, what the specific reforms ought to be, or who could implement them, or whether there even should be specific reforms. I mean, those are discussions that take place in any large social movement, because a social movement is a big, unwieldy, ragged, complicated, changing, evolving phenomenon. It's not like an assembly of people who have a debate and pass laws. So that would be true in any, you know, this, what we call the civil rights movement today, interestingly enough, didn't call itself a civil rights movement. It called itself the freedom movement. And the freedom movement was always full of arguments about where the goals were and how to stage them and win them.
Well, and hold on to that thought. We have to take a very short break, and we'll get back to our conversation with Todd Gitlin and with you at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. The music of Sir Edward Elgar could inspire the empire. Charles Dutoit and the Philadelphia Orchestra present Elgar's Enigma Variations. Also, Robert Schumann's Cello Concerto with Gautier Capucin. Tickets online, philorc.org. By phone, 215-893-1999. October 28th and 29th at the Kimmel Center, Elgar's Enigma Variations with Charles Dutoit and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're in the middle of the membership campaign here at WHYY. Become a supporter of WHYY. Just take a minute or two and go to WHYY.org or call 1-888-345-9499 and make that pledge of support. You decide what WHYY means to you. In this hour, we're talking about Occupy Philadelphia with two participants and with the former head of SDS. We have the time to explore issues at length and in depth. That's why you listen, and that's why we do the show. Thanks.
Philadelphia Theater Company supports WHYY and welcomes Oscar nominee Haley Joel Osment and Broadway veteran Stephen Rao in the Tony Award-winning Red. Red is a portrait of master abstract expressionist Mark Rothko, who has just landed the biggest commission in the history of the art world, and his young assistant as they work feverishly to create a definitive work of art. Tickets for Red, starting October 14th, are available at 215-985-0420 or philadelphiatheatercompany.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about the Occupy movement, as it is called. Todd Getlin is our guest. He's a professor of journalism and sociology, chair of the PhD program in communications at Columbia University. Back in the 60s, he was actually the third president of Students for a Democratic Society, SDS. He's the author of many books, including a novel called Undying and The Chosen Peoples, America, Israel, and the Ordeals of Divine Election. And we asked him to join us today in Radio Times to talk about this movement. And I do want to talk with you, Todd, about the media coverage. And it's been about a month in New York. And I know that you have been both a critic, I guess, early on, that the movement was largely ignored. And then when there were troubles, the media began to pay attention. How would you say the coverage is now?
It's now, I think, pretty good. There's native curiosity about who these people are and how they function. The coverage isn't dismissive. It's not obsessed with the fringe activity or the fringy-looking people. There were arrests in Times Square at various points on Saturday, but the coverage was not hysterical about arrests. It was just sort of a matter-of-fact reporting. I noticed there's an article in New York Times this morning about how the groups in the park actually function. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a sort of sniff, a clucking at their irregularity and their odd habits, but there's actually some sense of how decisions get made. So I'd say there's been a multiple learning process, and journalists have actually, I think especially after the October 5th demonstration, when so many people turned out who were not easily dismissible as kooks, the coverage has actually galloped by leaps and bounds.
In fact, we had a piece in the Times earlier this month, and the date on this is October 8th, so it's obviously in the initial period of Occupy Wall Street, and one of the people there had a sign that read, "Am I dressed too nice so the media doesn't interview me?" And you're saying the media's sort of gotten over that freak show hump?
I think so, for the most part. I mean, when I say media here, I'm talking about real media. I'm not talking about Fox News and the other Murdoch enterprises, which are still, you know, hoping the police will bring out a pepper spray cannon and disperse the rebels. But yes, I think we're now seeing this sort of intense seriousness and recognition something's going on here that's kind of remarkable.
Let me get Bill from Belmont Hills to join our conversation. And Bill, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Hi there. I just wanted to say, it's pretty clear to me that the media is really trying to destroy this whole movement. I mean, they're focusing so much on the appearance of some of the demonstrators. They're saying that there's a lack of specific focus, and they see this movement as transient. But the previous guests you had on today were very clear that the movement is pretty unified behind one or two goals. You know, the negative influence of corporate money on politics and the disproportionate wealth between the rich and the poor in the country. And, you know, those are the two main things. I don't think there's any mystery about it. And if you look, if you want to check out this thesis, just check out the cartoon in this morning's Inquirer. It's a total smear job about the demonstrators and about these demonstrations. And, you know, I understand that the newspapers and the media want to sell, but, you know, they're really selling out this movement.
Well, Bill, let me give Todd Gitlin a chance to weigh in on that. And Todd, I mean, it sounds like Bill's saying that there hasn't been this kind of learning curve that you've been talking about.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that the Inquirer is way behind the curve. That sounds appalling and egregious. I still think things have improved on the big networks and in the New York Times. And so I'll rest my case.
Okay, fair enough. But do you think at some point, and maybe this goes back to your SDS days of the 1960s, and I frankly remember those days very well, but at some point, if you are occupying a place, you do have to come up with a list of demands and maybe even begin to ally yourself with institutions or organizations outside yourself, or not so much?
Well, there's a dispute. I mean, what you just said is exactly what's disputed. I've talked to young radicals in both New York and Boston who think that what they really want to hold on to is community, public space, the process. The process is everything and the goals not so much. And they are deeply alienated from institutions and from normal hope. Some of them are the people who actually started this thing, so I don't dismiss them. I think that there's an edge of a movement, as there was an edge in the 60s, of a movement that, you know, wants the world and wants it now, and bless them. However, I don't know that it's necessary for every encampment to have its own list of demands, but I do think that it would be highly advantageous for some assemblage, whether, you know, some sort of delegates from the Occupy encampments, or some sort of alliance of what I call the outer movement of groups like unions and community organizations and so on, to draw up this, my pet idea, I'm not speaking for anyone else here,
right,
draw up sort of the equivalent of a contract with America, which then can be promoted in the country and specifically applied to candidates running in the 2012 elections. You know, support this 5-point program for driving money out of politics, curbing the plutocrats, etc., or we won't support you, and vice versa. If you do, we will support you. That, you know, I think that's called for. But, you know, this thing is only a month old, and I think that debate will probably go on, and it will be probably not resolvable, actually, because both tendencies, sort of the maximalists and the reformers, let's say, will persist, and, you know, they each have their reasons. And I think movements thrive when those groupings can mutually reinforce each other rather than savaging each other.
We could do a whole hour on this, but do you see some connections between what's going on in these Occupy tent cities and the Tea Party movement of a couple of years ago?
Well, the Tea Party movement originally had a grassroots character, and there's still a grassroots element to it, important. But it very quickly was channeled and funded by the right wing of the Republican Party. So it's become actually the tail that wags the dog of the Republican Party. It was much easier because Republicans are more hierarchical and more respectful of authority, including their own. So it was easier for them to become that. This movement is nowhere near as advanced. By the way, on the previous caller's point about coverage, it's been documented by Nate Silver, who blogs at the New York Times, that the coverage of the Tea Party started out much bigger than the coverage of the Occupy movement. But the Occupy movement is catching up just quantitatively.
Interesting. Let me get, looks like Stephanie from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Stephanie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
And Marty, love your show.
Thank you so much.
My question is, I find all of this fascinating, but specifically I find Obama and other members of the Democratic Party, the way that they kind of stammer through support, non-support. I feel like they're looking for a way to align themselves with the Occupy movement, because to some extent these are definitely Obama's people. But I'm just wondering about the decision that I've heard that the Occupy movement has made not to align itself with any Democratic or Republican or with any political party at all.
Well, I appreciate the call, Stephanie. I should just add that President Obama made a reference to the Occupy movement yesterday at the dedication of the Martin Luther King Memorial. But picking up on her comment there, Todd, whether the Occupy people want the Democratic Party to be involved in their movement, how do you see this relationship,
well,
as such as it is?
It's tense, and I think probably still evolving. There were rumors over the weekend around the White House that Obama was going to be much more full-throatedly supportive of the movement, as, for example, Nancy Pelosi has been. I don't know whether that's going to materialize. I don't think there's a way for I think it's probably, my guess is that if you canvassed in an old-fashioned sort of count-the-vote way, the occupants of the various public spaces in the movement and ask them how they feel about Obama, you get more negativity, mm-hmm. maybe a lot more negativity than positivity. I've talked to some people in New York in the encampment who are open to supporting him, but they want to see more. But I don't know what the balance is. There's no way to say that the movement has made a decision, because it doesn't mm-hmm. function that way. It's not a parliament. But I think it would be wise for both Obama and other Democrats to be more full-throated, much more, about this movement, if for no other reason than that they have a serious enthusiasm gap. Many of the people here did work for Obama in 08 and maybe had excessive expectations of how far he could walk across the water before falling into the polluted waters of American politics. But be that as it may, they need the Democrats need to fire people up. And, you know, people have been sitting on their hands and grousing for a long time about how the economy is what it is, and the powers are what they are, and the impunity of Wall Street is what it is. And so I think it's a potentially determining moment for the Democrats.
Let me get George from Philadelphia to join our conversation. George, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question or comment, I guess, is I believe the power of this movement, which I thoroughly enjoy, and I want to congratulate everyone who's done it. I haven't done enough, but some. There is the fact that there is no defined purpose, because I believe that anyone in this country that is wondering what the purpose is missing it. Is the purpose the fact that we are building 20 prisons to every school? Is the purpose the fact that if you're in a city, you cannot get a good education intentionally? Is the purpose the fact that they have continually to demeaned and ruin the entire working class of this country? I could go on, and I can't imagine one person who would walk by Occupy Philadelphia, even though it would be a personal reason, couldn't say, I get why they're there. The bottom line is the American dream is decaying at its core.
What?
And if we try to put one purpose onto that, I fully believe we're going to miss the whole point, because this is going to be a long-term reconstruction that are doing it.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Todd, do you have a quick response to George's comment?
Yeah, I think he's right.
that quick.
Is that quick enough?
It is quick enough. But he, I mean, essentially, he's talking about the American dream, and such as it is, and I guess that leads to income inequality.
I'm sorry, Marty.
No, it's okay.
You know, here's a couple of interesting things. One, to my knowledge, there have been no counter demonstrations. So, and number two, if you go to at least the New York Park and you just observe the demeanor of people who come by, not the occupiers in the encampment, but people who stroll by. Some might be tourists, some might be, I presume a lot of them are people who work in the area. They're curious. And the relationships, discussions, even disputes are amicable. I mean, yeah, there are some people around New York who are quite angry at various unsanitary practices and the loud drum beating. And this is a real test for the anarchists. In fact, I was talking to one of the occupiers the other day. He said, you know, there's one drummer who won't stop drumming and keeping people up. The other drummers were willing to confine themselves to drumming 2 hours a day.
Well, you know,
now,
Todd,
from 12.
Todd, if you don't mind, just hold on to that thought for 1 second. I need to quickly reintroduce you, Todd Gitlin, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, talking about Occupy. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
Well, this is about democracy, isn't it? Hello, I am Susan Greenbaum, one of the producers of Radio Times, here with my colleague Dave Davies, reminding you that this is our October membership campaign, hoping you will take a moment to give us a call at 1-888-345-9499.
Right, Susan, and of course, it's so critically important that we come together to support this service, which is unique. You know, I think people who listen to Marty and Radio Times are a special community. I mean, they know what she does. You look at a program like her examination of the Occupy Philadelphia. And by the way, have we said the phone number yet?
I just did, but I'll say it again.
Let's get to it. 1-888-345-9499. You look at Marty. If you listen to this program, she researched the subject. She went and visited
this
the
morning,
site.
This morning, she did.
She visited the site, and her questions are well-prepared. She listens carefully, asks follow-ups, which are pointed, sometimes challenging, but always respectful in her own way, manages the phone calls, makes sure the conversation stays focused, but gets to the real issues behind the issues day in, day out. It's really worth supporting. That's what we need. We're coming together. This is a thing that we all do together, and it would give us a terrific lift, and Marty a terrific lift, if here in the middle of this membership drive, when things can get a little slow, you take that step. Do it now. 1-888-345-9499 or on the web at whyy.org.
Might I mention, Dave, that we are about to celebrate Marty's 25th year on
wow.
the air. And those of us at Radio Times always say, 500 shows a year, 25 years, how does she do it? You know, our goal at Radio Times is to bring you a breadth of conversations. We cover topics as varied as this morning's Occupy Philadelphia. Last week, we had author Russell Banks, who's one of Marty's all-time favorite guests. He's been on our guest several times. We've talked about the debate over single-sex schooling. We had Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez on a few weeks ago. On Friday, we talked about gangster movies. We tend to lighten it up in our first hour. In our second hours, our first hours tends to be hard news. And we have a cadre of loyal listeners. We know that. We get your emails. We hear from you. We're hoping if you are an avid listener of Marty's, if you appreciate what she's done for 25 years, you'll support what all of us do here at WHYY by becoming a member at 1-888-345-9499.
You know, Susan, I often think that if you didn't get a newspaper, if you didn't do anything but listen to Radio Times, you would be a pretty informed person, because not only would you understand things like the